Well, good afternoon, Juneau. It's about 3 seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today. I'll be hosting you for Juneau Afternoon, and today I'm going to be introducing a new professor at the University of Alaska, Professor of Communications and Media Studies, Matt Gushwan, will join us here with some of his work on productions that he did while he was working in Indiana. And Nancy DeCherney will drop by with Arts Up, and we'll have a couple of folks here from the public market to tell us about the things that are going on over there. Weather forecast looks like mostly cloudy, locally windy. The highest winds will be around downtown Juneau and Douglas, and then cloudy and windy tomorrow, and Saturday rain and snow showers likely.
There is an island,
King Island, King Island,
in the middle of the Bering Sea, a tiny island made of rock without a single tree.
The rock is so high, it scratches the sky.
Beginning Thursday night of this week, and on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, there will be performances of King Island Christmas at Aldersgate United Methodist Church. And then next weekend at the Downtown Jack, there will be Thursday, Friday, Saturday performances and Sunday. Tickets are available throughout the area. And now, National Native News.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Today we conclude our series on the high number of premature births among Native American women. KGOU's Kirk Gortney visited a neonatal intensive care unit to get an idea of the unique needs of these tiniest of children.
At Mercy Hospital in Oklahoma City, you won't hear the name neonatal intensive care unit said in full very often. Instead, the special place where newborns weighing less than 1 pound spend the first part of life outside of the womb is called the NICU. That's where I meet Julie LeClaire, who provides support for the families of premature babies.
The general ways that I help is sort of give gifts and hugs and hold hands and listen to their stories, and I do sort of crafts and provide food and things like that.
But her support also reaches a deeper level, providing education to families on how to help their babies both in and out of the hospital. Something as natural as breastfeeding is more difficult for preemies because they often can't be held to eat, and even holding a premature newborn is different than carrying a full-term infant. Dr. Lori Krause is a neonatologist at Mercy Hospital.
Basically, I'm the physician that takes care of all the babies in the NICU, whether they come for prematurity or for other health-related reasons.
Dr. Krause says there are several things a pregnant woman can do to reduce the risk of having a baby too early. Several of those risk factors are prevalent among Native American and Alaska Native women.
Obesity, which I know can be a problem with the Native American population, diabetes, which can be a problem with the Native American population, both of those things increase a woman's risk of having an unhealthy pregnancy and an early birth.
The March of Dimes says its Coming of the Blessing Project works to identify and overcome those health issues, while also providing encouragement for the traditional support within indigenous communities. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
A holiday art market recently held in Albuquerque helps promote Native artists. Gail Chihak is an advocate of Indian art and secretary of New Mexico's American Indian Chamber of Commerce.
I think it's important to support our communities, regardless of which community it is, to buy local, to buy handmade, handcrafted, and to support the people within your own community. That's how we're going to make our community stronger. I think buying American Indian art is one of the best ways to get something that really represents this country and that represents a culture that's been here since time immemorial, as everyone says, and to support some craftsmen who have been supporting their culture, their people, and representing the art to the world.
Laguna Pueblo artist Mark Stevens is a silversmith focusing on handmade jewelry replicating ancient pottery shards.
A lot of galleries and stores and shops and boutiques, even in the hotels, carried local art. But because of the economy and the cost of handmade art, they've routed other ways. They've, you know, gone overseas and bought fake or knockoff, whatever's affordable. And that mentality of buying what's affordable has really hurt the true art industry, I think. I've seen a decrease in sales since I first started over the years in all the shows that I've done, including the major shows like in the Santa Fe Indian Market, but I've seen a decrease in sales, and the economy has definitely impacted it. But I think a lot of that is because of the art that's not being represented properly and being sold cheaply.
Stevens was among dozens of artists to participate in the Native Art Market at the University of New Mexico. During this week in 1972, the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, the nonprofit for the Aleut region in Alaska, was officially incorporated. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's almost 7 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska, and my first two guests are here from across the street. The public market is going on today downtown in Juneau, and Peter Metcalf, who's one of the organizers, and Janae Reese from the Girl Scout troop that's doing the wrapping are both here in the studio with me, and they're going to tell us a little bit of what's going on. Peter, what time did you open up this morning?
Well, we opened at noon, and there's been a very healthy crowd. As many people who've been to the public market know, this is our strongest hours, the first 3 hours of opening, but we're open till 8 p.m. tonight and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday.
So, Janae, you're part of a Girl Scout troop that's helping with the wrapping, is that right?
Yes, we have pre-wrapped boxes.
Are you getting a little business?
Yeah.
I noticed you cut your prices.
Yeah, we're on sale right now. We cut it down, and if you want a small box, it's $3, and a large box is $6.
All right, and how many scouts are doing the booth?
Currently two.
Ooh, yeah, they have a couple mothers there, too. So it's a well-manned booth.
You're likely to get overwhelmed. Now, I noticed that you are wearing a flowered lei around your neck. What's that about?
Yeah, my troop 4026, we're fundraising to go to Hawaii, this summer.
So is this your primary fundraising thing, or do you have other things going on?
Yes, this is a primary fundraiser. Okay. We're hoping to earn enough money.
Yeah. So what's the draw for Hawaii besides just, laying on the beach and kind of chilling out?
I think there is another Girl Scout troop or two, down in Hawaii. We could probably meet up with them.
Oh, okay. So get together and do some activities with the Girl Scouts.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Sounds like fun. Yeah. Peter, how many booths are people or exhibitors, or how would you say that?
Well, we have vendors. We have about 170 vendors in the two venues, which is the public market in Centennial Hall and the public market annex and the Jack, or the old National Guard Armory. And we have vendors from all over Alaska. We have one from Ohio, another one from Northern California, and several from Washington and Oregon, but mostly Alaskan vendors.
What's the Ohio vendor selling, out of curiosity?
That's a good question. I think it's pottery, if I'm not mistaken.
Huh.
I'm dealing with these lists of vendors.
Yeah.
So I have the little Rolodex in my brain is kind of rifling through it right now.
You've organized this a few times, I think, right?
Yes. It was one of the first events in Centennial Hall in 1983, and we've been doing it ever since. And that makes this the 30th annual.
Oh, so big celebration. Do you have? Is there a theme for the 30th annual? Or
we're a little bit shy about that only because we've been 30, and it seems like we've been doing it forever. But we're really happy to have people like the Girl Scout booth and their fundraising. We're able to give special deals to. No cost rentals to people like the Girl Scouts as well as the Salvation Army. They have a booth there, the auxiliary selling it's called Grandma's Attic, and it's about, you know, thing collectibles that they've get from their members, antiques, and they do real well. And so there's a whole collection of vendors, and about 25% of them, or 40 vendors, are all new to the public market, never been there before. Mm. So, and we have about that turnover. And if you haven't been to a market in a couple of years, about half the vendors are going to be completely new to you. So it's a good mix.
Yeah. Is there a difference between who's in the Jack and who's in the main hall? Is that,
yeah,
how does that split up?
The ones who are in the Jack tend to sign up later.
Okay.
But no, they it's quite a bit cheaper, about half the cost of displaying in Centennial Hall. And, you know, we do make, we ask the vendors who are in Centennial Hall to be offering products available only at the public market or doing displays. In some cases, people invite artists from out of town. And because we charge admission at the Centennial Hall, and we do not at the Annex. But as it turns out, what happens in the Annex is we have a very mixed bag. And they're all good, but, you know, some are just excellent vendors from out of town, never been here before, and this is their first time, and they called me late, and, you know, we found a place for them there.
Found a place for them over there, yeah. Out of curiosity, what's it cost to be in the market?
It's about around $400 for the 3 days.
Oh, okay.
Depends. There's lesser booths down to $120 up to quite a bit more than that, depending on space and size.
And you charge to get into the Centennial Hall.
Right.
What's the fee?
That's $7 for the. That's good for the weekend.
And that's a day or a week pass, a weekend pass, right?
That's right.
You all the way through.
Yeah.
So you're on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and tonight you're open until 8. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, one thing I wanted to mention is really a great thing that happened just before we opened to the public. And this couple walked in, and I could tell they weren't vendors, and I was about to, you know, kind of usher them out. And they handed me this envelope, and it was full of cash. And they said, somebody lost this. And I was just amazed and delighted. And I'll tell you, the vendor who had dropped it in the parking lot was in tears when I handed it back to
him. Was amazed and delighted as well.
Yeah,
I should imagine.
You know, we have a wonderful community.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And
these vendors are from out of town. And this kind of happened once or twice before. And it just blows them away that people would do that. Yeah. And, of course, we gave them this couple free admission for the weekend.
I bet you did. Yeah.
The least we could do.
So, Janae, are you a Juneau girl?
Yes.
Did you grow up here?
Yeah, I came when I was 2, and I've lived here since.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing to do in Juneau?
I like to go swimming. Girl Scouts a lot, too.
Yeah, yeah, obviously.
So do you go swimming at the new water park?
Yeah.
I'm a big-time swimmer, too, but I'm one of the old fogies down at the old swimming pool.
Is there anything at the end of the farmer's market? Do you get together and have a big party or anything like that?
We kind of used to when we were younger, but no, we go home and go to bed.
Janae, you should organize a post public market party.
Yeah, you can go over to the
because the old folks aren't going to do it. The other thing that happens on this weekend is I know on Tuesday I had guests here from Holy Trinity Church, and they're doing their bazaar so that it wraps around this thing. And I would imagine that there are other venues as well. I think in the past the Native community has.
You know, I actually organized that. That was their first public market annex, was in the A&B building.
Yeah.
And subsequent, you know, then the Jack came online and we moved the annex there. And then there was at least one or two Native markets that followed along the line. But one thing I'd like to say to the public is if somebody's organizing an event at the same weekend, they should call me up and we'll help promote it.
Yeah, put it all
together. Because we want people to come downtown. Enjoy. You know, we know a lot of people out in the valley don't make it downtown that much. And
well,
this is good.
I know. I came downtown this afternoon, probably about 1 o'clock, and parking had become a problem already. It was pretty interesting.
I want to say something about
the
that.
The Coast Guard lot had filled up. The Centennial Hall lot was full and like that.
There's a lot of satellite lots, and it might take a moment. But you know, here in Juneau, how we you know, moan about, oh, it's, we got to walk to the building. Well, you know, I measured it out. It's a 3-minute walk.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't want to put you out. But another thing I want to mention, that people ought to come down, if you're thinking about it, come down to the public market at 6 o'clock tonight. We're having the Juno Cello Choir.
Ah.
A dozen celloists will be strumming Christmas carols. And we heard them practice last night, and it's really enchanting.
Yeah. So the cellists will be there at 6 tonight.
6 o'clock tonight.
Do you have other entertainment scheduled through the weekend?
In fact, I think one of the Girl Scouts troops was going to come through and do some Christmas carols. I think it was another one of your competitors.
Is yours the only troop that's doing the Hawaii trip?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So if someone wanted to help out on this Hawaii venture, who would they get a hold of? Is there like a someone in charge of the troop that they could contact?
Melanie Coleman.
Okay.
She's our troop leader.
Okay. You don't happen to have a phone number or anything like that?
No, not okay. Right now.
But her name is Melanie Coleman, and
yeah.
It's troop number what?
4026.
4026. Is there a website or anything like that that would get you to the Girl Scouts?
You could just go on the Girl Scout website. Melanie Coleman's pretty well known across town.
Okay. Well,
yeah, and I can link them up if anybody really wants to make the connection. JunoPublicMarket.com. Find the contact information for me. And I do a lot of post-event connecting up where people will say they saw somebody down at the public market, and you know, I can generally give them a contact right away.
Well, that's real good of you, Peter. So maybe somebody might judge that you might not sell quite enough boxes to make a trip to Hawaii possible. How many girls would be going?
About 8 or 9 girls.
8 or 9 girls.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a fairly hefty price to put up 8 or 9 girls for. How long are you going to stay over there, do you know?
Probably about a week.
About a week, yeah. Okay, well, you have some fundraising ahead of you. I'm hoping the boxes sell well.
Yeah, let's get, just remember, if you buy the perfect gift at the public market, you can get the perfect wrapping at the Girl Scout booth in the annex.
Absolutely, sounds like, and then you take it home and nobody can know what's inside that box. So
exactly.
You can get it through the door.
Don't
that's
have to do like me and hide them and then try to remember where the hell they are.
Yeah, I think everyone's had that experience with Christmas. Let's go out of this with a little appropriate music, shall we?
Christmas time's coming, and I know I'm
Lots of opportunities if you're beginning to think about your Christmas shopping, with the public market open today until 8 o'clock tonight and tomorrow and Sunday. One price gets you into all 3 days. It's at Centennial Hall, and over across the street in the Jack is the Annex. Free admission to the Annex. 170 vendors in town. We've just been talking with Janae Reese and Peter Metcalf about it. And go on down and check out the market. There's a notice out about the glacier. Tongass National Forest officials are reminding Juneau residents to use extreme caution on Mendenhall Lake and on the glacier. Fluctuations in air temperature at this time of year can cause the icebergs to crack and melt in places, and there's no detection of that. So it's particularly dangerous near the waterfalls and at the glacier's front edge or terminus. So if you're recreating out on the Mendenhall Lake or the glacier, just be really careful and stay well away from the edges.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
Sharon McCrae is 18 years old and a recent East Anchorage High School graduate of achievement. She did well academically and earned awards and scholarships. She set goals for herself and lived up to a high, self-imposed standard. And while she doesn't dwell on the past, Sharon's early life could have set her on a very different path.
When I was born, when I lived with my parents, I lived with both of my biological parents until I was about 5. And then my little sister was born when I was 5. And then that's when we went to our first foster home, and that's kind of when the whole process of us being in the system started.
Sharon and her sister lived with numerous foster families until they ended up in a neglectful and abusive situation with a relative. Sharon was 9, and that's when she was given what turned out to be a life-altering choice. She could go by herself to live with her mom, or she could stay with her little sister and live together with their aunt. She chose to stay with her sister.
She was already signed over to my aunt, so that was the decision that I had to make.
And you said you were 9?
I was 9.
At first, adjusting to life with her aunt was a little difficult. She says she wasn't used to a lot of rules and expectations. But now, Sharon says, she sees what an important role model her aunt has been.
She's a single mom. She's very, I guess, independent covers it. She likes to do things on her own. She doesn't like to depend on other people. And it shows us, it shows my sisters, that we don't need to depend on anyone.
Sharon is headed to Spelman College in Georgia this year. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 23rd of November, 2012. It's the anniversary of the debut of the Jukebox, 1889, at the Palais Royal Saloon in San Francisco. You put a nickel in the slot, and you listen to the music through a sort of stethoscope tube. 1903, on this date, Enrico Caruso made his American debut at the Metropolitan Opera House in Rigoletto. He was the son of an auto mechanic in Naples. His father tried to get him to work in a factory, but the boy ran away from home at the age of 16, supported himself singing at weddings and funerals. His American debut, 1903, on this date, went pretty well, and he got better and better with each performance. By the end of the season, audiences at the Met were shouting and screaming his name. And less than 3 months after that, he made some recordings for the Victor Company. And Caruso's voice had a quality that shone through all the static in those early 78s. And his singing, his popularity, helped to transform the phonograph from a sort of curiosity into a household item. He became the first vocal recording star. Caruso said his success could be attributed to 6 things: a big chest, a big mouth, 90% memory, 10% intelligence, lots of hard work, and something in the heart. And it's the birthday of a man about whom many, many books have been written, William H. Bonney, Jr., born New York City, 1859, who came to be known as Billy the Kid after the family moved out to Kansas and then to Colorado and finally New Mexico, where he turned to crime, stole horses, rustled cattle, got involved in a feud in Lincoln County, New Mexico, and in behalf of his boss, John Tunstall, Billy the Kid, shot and killed people on the other side, for which he was hunted down by the sheriff, Pat Garrett, and killed in 1881. Here's a poem for today by Gray Shulman entitled God's Letters. When God thought up the world, the alphabet letters whistled in his crown where they were engraved with a pen of fire, each wanting to begin the story of creation. S said, I am soul, I can shine out from within your creatures. God replied, I know that, but you are sin, too. L said, I am love, and I brush away malice. God rejoined, yes, but you are lie, and falsehood is not what I had in mind. P said, I am praise, and where there's a celebration, I perform in my purple coat. Yes, roared God, but at the same time, you are pessimism, the other side of praise, and so forth. All the letters had two sides or more. None was pure. There was a clamor in paradise, words, syllables shouting to be seen and heard for the glory of the new heavens and earth. God fell silent, wondering, how can song rise from that commotion? Rather than speculate, God chose B, who had intoned bashfully, boldly, blessed is his name, and he made A first in the alphabet for admitting, I am all, a limitation and a possibility. A poem by Gray Shulman, God's Letters, from Days of Wonder, New and Selected Poems, published by Houghton Mifflin Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering articles from international writers about finances, art, food, wine, culture. You can celebrate the weekend at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 29 minutes almost after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest is a new addition to the faculty at the University of Alaska Southeast. Matt Gushwan is here. Matt is a professor of communications and media studies. Welcome to Juneau.
Thank you.
Yeah, you just came up this last summer, right?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, from Indiana.
Got here in August. Drove all the way through.
Yeah, yeah. In the heat of the Alcan Highway, it's not quite as bad as it was back in the 40s and 50s when you used to have a lot of gravel and dust. But anyway,
we had plenty of dust, but not too much gravel.
Was that your first 4,000-mile auto trip?
In fact, it was. Our poor new car, we drove to Florida to see my in-laws earlier in the summer, and then later in the summer we drove to Alaska, so we really had seen quite a breadth of the United States.
Yeah, you know, it's possible to drive from Chile to Prudhoe Bay, so maybe they maybe need to add those two little legs onto there.
Yeah, next summer.
Finish
maybe.
It out. So it looks like you've made the transition well. You did some really interesting undergraduate research. Well, not undergraduate, but in your doctoral program, you did a bunch of stuff with Italian soccer teams. Is that you?
Yeah.
How does that come about, man?
Well, there's a long version and a short version, I guess. But I studied.
Let's make the medium version. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I studied abroad in Rome, and I really liked Italian cinema, so I went into graduate school, graduate studies in cinema. But then one of my advisors kind of was half retired, and I lost my love for cinema, but kindled my love for another passion. of Italian culture, which was the soccer stadium. So I had to figure out what the heck those people were doing in the stands.
It gets pretty violent over there at times.
It does.
The stands.
Yeah. Well, it has a life of its own. You know, occasionally really bad things do happen, but a lot of it, there's a lot of shouting, a lot of scuffling, but there tends not to be too many bad things, although over the course of the years, you know, there have been definitely some tragedies.
Well, if I understood the last part of your research, you had actually kind of developed a theory that this was this is part of the way that communities form, is around the soccer fandom kind of thing.
Yeah, well, absolutely. In Rome, I mean, one of the clubs I got to know, they're in a little neighborhood of Rome called Testaccio, and it's a bunch of older men. They were a little bit younger when they started, but it's really a center for people to gather and congregate, especially for men, largely to go play cards after work and things like that. So there's a real sense of solidarity in the community that kind of evolves around this passion for the team.
Yeah. So and around that comes a kind of an identity for the community and that sort of thing.
Absolutely, and that's the other thing about soccer is, you know, it allows people to gather together and really vent their frustrations, but also to think about what they have in common. And if you think about it, all sports are, they tend to be geographically sort of based, so it's always our town against the other town.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's even more heightened in Italy, in a country that there's centuries, millennia old rivalries between some of the old city states that are now, you know, the urban centers.
When you came back, you kind of continued dealing with community in a sense, and we're about to hear a recording that you helped produce that looks at another aspect of an American community, right?
Yeah, so this was during my graduate studies at Indiana University. There are plans, and they're not only plans, they are building a highway going from Mexico to Canada, and it's going through Indiana. And, you know, it's disruptive to all the people that live along the highway. And, you know, obviously there's, for commerce reasons, a lot of people support it, but the people that are directly impacted by this certainly don't. So we tried to, I was part of a larger project with my colleague, Mac Haygood, to try to capture some of the voices, some of the soundscapes that are going to be forever lost, really, by this highway.
So shall we take a listen to the resulting recording?
That would be great.
Wonderful.
I'm Perry Stone. Well, my dad's ancestors were Blackamore, were last name of Blackamore, and they moved into this area in the early 1800s, and this is part of the original farm.
Perry Stone lives with his 93-year-old mother, Helen, in Bloomfield, Indiana. Bloomfield is a town of approximately 2,400 people, about 80 miles southwest of Indianapolis. The Stones live on a 100-acre farm, 7 miles south of the center of Bloomfield. The surrounding land is hilly and heavily wooded.
I'm Helen Stone. We had spoken for this farm in 1940 from an older family, and their name was Stone. But they were relation to my husband's side of the family, and they promised this farm to us when we did get married. So we went ahead and got married in 1940, December 24th, 1940. And we came down here in October of 1944 without electricity. But they had promised us there would be electricity come through. And we did have to wait. We waited 3 years before the electricity did come through. We was just so happy after electricity came. I always said that's one bill I never minded to pay because I sure would enjoy.
Despite the difficulties of living in a farmhouse that is over a century old, the Stones enjoy the quiet hills of Bloomfield, and they are content with their way of life.
Well, where I was born and raised and spent all but my, well, of course, I came home on the weekends when I was working in Indianapolis, but, you know, I've lived my adult life here, 61 years. Like I say, mom is, or 51 years, I'm thinking I'm older than I am. Mom has been here for 67 years. You can't put a monetary value on property that, you know, it's more than just ground, which is the state mentioned to us that there's no value for sentimental value, which of course is true. Like I say, this property's been in a family name of either Blackmore or Stone probably since the early 1800s. If it wasn't for I-69, none of this property would have ever been sold.
Interstate 69 is a road in process. There's the completed section of the highway that runs northeast from Indianapolis to the Canadian border in Port Huron, Michigan, and then there is the section of I-69 that is in various stages of construction that continues southwest to the Mexican border in Texas. Because the proposed route will go from Mexico to Canada, I-69 has been nicknamed the NAFTA Highway. A mile down the road from the Stones' farm, construction workers are reshaping a wooded hill into a flat, barren path. At the Hassler Junction Marathon Station, the man behind the counter jokes with construction workers who have been clearing the land for I-69.
My name is Aaron Hamm, and I work here at Hassler Junction. I'm also the town council president in Bloomfield.
I-69 has spawned a debate in Bloomfield about whether the interstate will be an improvement or an enormous loss. As town council president, Aaron has witnessed the effect of government grants on Bloomfield's infrastructure.
You know, it has helped in the, it's helped us get grants. We got our new sidewalks put in. Hopefully this will help us get some grants to help upgrade our sewer plant. The state's coming through. They're going to widen some of the roads, you know, right up by the courthouse if you've been through Bloomfield. When you're going and you turn to go to Bloomington, they're going to basically cut the corners to give the trucks more room to turn. You know, something that should have been done 30 years ago, but they're going to do it now. Thanks, I-69.
The increase in traffic could also help some local businesses, such as the gas station that Aaron works at.
This business here, oh, I think it'll help it tremendously. I think that once it opens, this place might be 24 hours, you know, because there's going to be they say the exit ramps are going to be 1,000 feet away from the store. But I think, you know, the biggest thing around here, I think it's going to raise property values myself, you know. There's a lot of people trying to sell property, too, right now. But, you know, and it's supposed to be done up to this point by the end of next year.
Governor Mitch Daniels has been a steadfast supporter of I-69. He has argued that the road will have a positive economic impact on Indiana.
I don't think it's going to have as much impact as the governor says it's going to have myself. The best that we can figure on the town council and our committees is it's probably not going to have as much effect as they say it will. A lot of people think it, you know, people will move farther away, but other people might move closer to Indy. They say the only thing it's going to hurt is the local gas stations in town, but I don't know that I agree with that. You know, I think it's going to take a lot of traffic out of town myself.
Aaron is also familiar with the personal impact that the project is having on local residents.
A lot of the residents that's on the route's not very happy. There was a lady in here the other day that said they cut off the corner of their barn, and it was because when they come through and to give them the money for their property, they would not give them enough to replace the barn. So, you know, to build a pole barn, you know, 30 by 40, you know, it's $20,000 just for the building. And she said they wouldn't pay that. So it was cut the corner off of it or, you know, lose a bunch of money on it. And she said they tried to challenge it, and she said they got a letter in the mail said if they didn't agree to it that they was going to condemn the property, eminent domain. And I know another guy that lives back that direction, they're going to take almost 30 acres of his land And he says when they come out and talk to him, they had it all stuff that they said they was going to do. But when they come back with the papers, all that was left out.
The construction in front of the Hassler Marathon Station will eventually reach the Stones Farm only a mile away.
The highway that's coming through here will affect our property by about 30 acres. It will take approximately 15 acres of pasture or tillable farmland and about 15 acres of timberland and hunting property. Probably 2 years from now they'll be breaking ground, if not sooner than that.
But it's not just the Stones' livelihood and landscape that will be affected. The natural soundscape that they have always known will change as well.
In the woods, there's several species of woodpeckers. There's owls. There are some bats that the state is trying to protect, but typically you don't get any sounds other than just wildlife. And this, by the way, is Brad Williamson. He's one of our good neighbors who wanted to stop in and visit with us as well. And he's been in this area his whole life.
I don't think we'd trade this life for anything. And when you get used to this and you see a coyote run through your yard or
deers,
you know, or deers or turkeys, we have wild turkeys, you hear the woodpeckers and the owls, and you just can't get that. Well, you can only label it as terrible. If I'm sitting out on the deck, you know, they'll just drown you out. When I first heard about it, I thought, well, it's kind of like watching your brand new Cadillac go over a cliff with your mother-in-law in it. You don't know whether to laugh or cry, you know.
And I think what you get in a larger town, and around I-69, you're going to get the traffic and the trucks will drive away the wildlife.
The recording you've been listening to was produced by my guest, Matt Gushwan, and Matt has joined the faculty here at the University of Alaska Southeast. Matt, are you going to be doing any more production work now that you're here?
Yeah, in fact, this spring I'll be teaching Introduction to Audio and Video Production up at UAS.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to that.
There's a production facility there, I think.
Yeah, there's a little radio studio, and then we also have some, we have cameras and editing suites and some good stuff.
So how will that course fit into to a student's major? You're in the, I think you're part of the fine arts.
Well, it's actually the
humanities.
The humanities. Right. The BLA is part of the Bachelor of Liberal Arts.
Uh-huh.
And so you can do a concentration in communication and
so a course like this would fit right into that sequence.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So do you have majors who are doing the concentration?
Yeah, we definitely do, and we're definitely still trying to grow the program. Me and my colleague Jennifer Vernon, we're looking for more students to help to make the program really robust. I mean, this is a beautiful place, and there's so many environmental issues. We were just talking about some of the local environmental issues, and this would be a great place to use media to help to bring about some change.
Yeah,
last week. We had the Being Caribou folks here, and they were talking about how
The people who produced the film Being Caribou, from the book that was of the same title. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and she filmed the documentary with only a week's training.
Ah.
So that was one of the things we learned. But the point is, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of training to if you have a powerful cause, you know.
Mm-hmm. We've been doing a series of little short segments with some radio production here on Juno Afternoon on Tuesdays. The 3:30 to 3:45 slot has been given over to talking about sustainability issues for Juno. And I'm a thorough believer in the fact that radio can bring about change in many wonderful ways. So the object of that has been to kind of open up the door towards some first an exploration of what Juno's resources look like, and also simultaneously to explore ways in which we may be able to fairly simply implement some of those resources. We did four shows on composting, because it's a way to reduce the waste stream, and using radio to do that kind of thing is, I think, a wonderful thing. I'd love to work with your students when you get that class going, if you have students who are interested in perhaps doing some production for those shows.
Absolutely. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I think you're a wonderful addition to the University of Alaska faculty. I wish you good luck with your classes. What else will you be teaching in the spring?
I'll be teaching...
In this year.
Yeah, I'll be teaching Landscape and the Moving Image. So that's another class I'm looking forward to. We're gonna watch some of the grand cinematic films like Lawrence of Arabia, and to think about how landscape is part of the meaning system of film, but then how film itself actually conditions the way we understand space and think about place.
Cool. Any other great courses that I should immediately start thinking about enrolling in?
Actually, you'd be great for this. In the summer, I'll be teaching, I hope to be teaching an advertising course where students will actually make short advertisement.
Wow.
So we'll read some of the theory, some of the critical theory about advertising, and then give them cameras and respond to those readings through making their own.
All right. So short shot communications. You got to do it all in 60 seconds and tell the whole story. It's quite an art form that people don't realize sometimes.
Yeah, it's quite a challenge. And for those who like Mad Men, you can watch watch the development of that industry too.
Yeah. But. Well, wonderful. I think you're bringing some really great communications and media perspectives to the humanities department. So
well, I'm glad they brought me in. Yeah. It's been wonderful working with Jennifer Vernon, who's kind of blazed the trail. So
I'm glad that you're here and that the program is getting stronger. Well, welcome to Juno, Matt Gushman, new professor of communications and media studies at the University of Alaska Southeast.
Thanks, Pat.
So it's about 11 minutes before 4 o'clock, and we are about to find out what is going on in the art scene in Juneau, because Nancy DeCherney just walked into the studio, and so we have music on Fly Me to the Moon. Fly us to the moon, Nancy.
It's madness out there, Patrick.
Insanity of the public market at
oh,
all.
Oh, my goodness, and, you know, such wonderful stuff. Anyway, yes, we do have public market happening all this weekend. I think they're there tonight until 8, and then tomorrow all day until 5 and Sunday. And, yeah, come on down. There's so many people. The good news is you get to see a lot of people you haven't seen in a really long time. Mm-hmm. So it's great fun. Okay, at 7 p.m. tonight is the Douglas Tree Lighting. And there's also the November Barn Dance up at St. Anne's. Then there is, okay, you forgot to get your tickets to Oklahoma, didn't you?
Hey, I've been busy.
So I think there was one ticket to Oklahoma for tonight and tomorrow and 5 tickets, but that was several hours ago.
Ah.
Now, what they told me was if you didn't get your tickets and you would like to go, that they will start a wait list 1 hour prior to the show. So go over there at 6:30, put your name on the list, zip next door, have a nice little hamburger or something, and then, you know, my experience is about 10% of the people, for some reason, don't show up. They get sick, they forget, whatever. So you may get in. But by all means, you want to see the show, so if you can't go this weekend, try to go next weekend and get your tickets now because you see what happens. At 7:45, there is a skate with Santa and the elves in the Treadwell Arena. I think that follows the Christmas tree lighting, which is over at Savico Park, too. And then at 11 o'clock late at night, Evil Dead 2 at Rockwell. Saturday, all day this weekend, you can have photos with Santa at Nugget Mall. It's always fun. 9 a.m., it's the Holy Trinity Episcopal Church Bazaar. And at 10 a.m., I have the amateur radio thing. You want to talk about that?
At 10 a.m., the amateur radio thing.
Yeah.
Since I don't know a thing about it.
I thought it was to become the lessons or whatever.
Oh, those actually started 3 weeks ago.
So you can't start now? It's
no,
a
you
too
can't.
Late.
It's a little too late. However, on the 8th of December, if anyone wants to take an amateur radio exam at any level, we will be concluding that current technician class that's running right now. That ends on the 8th of December, and we will end it with a testing session. And those are held at the National Weather Service Forecast Office on the Back Loop Road.
Okay.
That one will probably be at 10 in the morning.
Okay.
And anyone who is interested in sitting down for any class of licensed technician, general or extra, they're more than welcome to come to the volunteer examiner session.
Great. I knew you would know all the answers.
And I should mention, right after that, the week after that, we'll be beginning an upgrade class. If someone has a technician class license and wants to go to the general class license, then that class will start a week later on Tuesday and Thursday nights.
Super. And at 10:30 at the Alaska State Museum, they continue their Native artist demonstrations. John Hughes, who is a Tlingit carver and he makes bentwood boxes, will be over there doing demonstrations and talking. And that's free, and it's really interesting stuff. So
that's at the State Museum?
The Alaska State Museum.
Yeah, and they have
free
admission during these events. Yeah.
Right. At 11 a.m., Santa will arrive at the Nugget Mall via helicopter.
All right.
Okay. I'm glad that we know that. Moontide opens, is having an open house. It's a new business, I think, on Old Dairy Road. At 6 p.m., there is a celebration of hope at Northern Light Church. It involves singing and potluck and all sorts of stuff. 7 p.m., there's something honoring Kay McCarthy over at the Sukkot Shalom. It is a fundraising event for the Garnet School Scholarships. Again, 7:30, Oklahoma. 9 p.m. at the Triple F Bar and Grill, and I have to confess, I don't know where that is.
I'm not sure I can find it either, but
somebody will.
Let me check Google real
yes.
quick.
Juno City Limits will be there, and the Doll Hearts open for them. And at 9:30 at the Red Dog Saloon, we've got the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band. Sunday at 3 o'clock, Tuba Christmas over at the Douglas Methodist Church. 7 p.m., there's folk dancing at the Downtown Racquetball Club, and there's also 7:30, Oklahoma. On Monday, we have the Arts Roundtable at 5. That's at the Jack. On Tuesday, the Sea Alaska Noon discussion is 300 Years of Tlingit Art, Aldana Jonaitis, I think is how her, I'm not sure about her name, but is a conversation. It's a brown bag lunch, and it's in the Sea Alaska boardroom. So
what day was that?
That's Tuesday at noon.
Okay.
On Wednesday, the Alaska Design Forum is bringing some architects from Tokyo, Tezuka Architects, to do a talk. I always find their discussions very, very interesting, the people they bring. That's at 6 p.m. at the Silver Bow. It's $10 or $5 if you're a student. Thursday, Cycle Alaska is having a thing at 5:30, Slacker Cycling. That's over at Cycle Alaska by the bridge over there. The UAS environmental film Red Gold is playing out at the university. And at 7 p.m., we're having an event called Inspiring Public Art.
We're meeting at the Jack.
Yes, we're meeting at the Jack, and we will be showing the best of the public art from around the country from 2008. We're going to do three of these throughout the year. So, yeah. And then at 7:30 on Thursday, the King Island Christmas Run begins.
Well, now let's back up just one little thing here, because on Wednesday night, they decided that the last dress rehearsal will be a pay-as-you-can at Aldersgate. So if anyone wants to show up for that, it's pay-as-you-can at 7 o'clock at Aldersgate, and it will be a rehearsal. So you're part of the final act there, I guess.
But it is always fun. And, you know, in order to have a performance, you need to have an audience. So that does help out to have people there. King Island Christmas will run Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at Aldersgate. And they will have a matinee on Saturday. And then next weekend they will be at the Jack. And that will also be during Gallery Walk. So it's going to be lots of fun and exciting things to do, and I hope that we see you out there at a few things. Let's see. Do we have a moment, or are we?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was rushing because usually we are.
No, we're in very good shape.
We are?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't even know where to start. We will be also, let's see, on November 30th, which I believe, what day is that, Tuesday?
I think it's Tuesday.
November 30th, in any case, the wearable art tickets go on sale for all of you people who are members of the
November 30th is a Friday.
It's a Friday. Okay, yeah. So we will be having wearable art tickets go on sale that day.
Okay.
So if you are interested in getting your tickets, doors will open at 10 a.m., and you need to be a Juno Arts and Humanities Council member. And we do have this thing going on where if you become a member at the $50 level, you get to win your name in the hat to win two Alaska Airlines tickets anywhere they fly.
Outstanding.
I know.
This is an exciting weekend leading into an incredible week of
many people today have said, how did it get to be this time of the year already?
Sure enough, with the public market announcing that it's time to get your Christmas shopping taken care of, right?
Yeah, and you're visiting.
Well, let's continue flying to the moon on our way out here. Thank you so much, Nancy,
for
filling us in. You want to tune in on Monday when Katie Bousler is a host. She's going to be talking about the 1 Million Bones Project, activities for kids, with guest M.K. McNaughton. Phoebe Rohrbacher will drop by. They're showing a movie at the Gold Town on Tuesday night called How to Survive a Plague. And Orca's Adaptive Ski Program will be part of the program as well. So that's on Monday for the Juno Afternoon with Katie Bousler hosting. You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas, and we also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, we're on K276 AF. That's at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO is at 101.7. Gustavus listens to us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9 in an excursion inlet and icy strait. KTOO comes in on 89.9 megahertz on K210 AS. We're also on GCI cable in Juneau on digital channel 871, 872 for KRNN, 873 for KXLL, and we stream continuously at www.ktoo.org. Updated the forecast, and they're saying scattered rain showers becoming snow showers early this evening, and the snow accumulation will be an inch or less, with lows 24 to 29, southeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour, gusting around 35 miles per hour, mostly downtown, and Saturday scattered snow flurries, and it looks like scattered snow showers, snow accumulation an inch or less, and highs around 32. So between the 2 days, we might wind up with almost another 2 inches of snow. Thank you for listening today. Pat Moore, been your host for Juno Afternoon.